Hello and welcome. You're listening to Fourth Estate, the show where journalists and sometimes others talk about journalism. Coming to you from 2SER in Sydney on Gadigal lands of the Eora Nation, right across Australia on the Community Radio Network and directly to your device across the globe via podcast. My name is Peter Frey and I'm the co-director of the Centre for Media Transition at the University of Technology Sydney, and my producer is Anthony Dockrell, and a big thank you to him. In this edition of The Fourth Estate, we are going to take a deep dive into the dynamic digital world of journalism, aimed mainly at female readers and listeners. I was going to say young women, but I think that may be limiting the scope and pool of what our guests are doing, very much so. And I'm getting a lot of nods in the studio. it's a dynamic place for many reasons, but I can name three. One is that for several years now, it's been a place where a lot of journalism innovation has been happening. Secondly, it's part of the market keenly sought by advertisers, so it's very important to keep an eye on what's going on in this space, I think. And thirdly, women are a great audience, right? They're pound for pound better at sharing and engaging with news and lifestyle journalism and all aspects of journalism than blokes. And as such, they might well be the future of the industry, I can only hope. So we're going to look at some key issues affecting women are being reported across the media, but we're really first going to concentrate on two fantastic organizations, and I've got three people from those two organizations to help me. Welcome to The Fourth Estate, Claire Kimball and Kate Watson from The Squiz.
Thank you.
We're going to talk a little bit, they're going to background us a bit on The Squiz in a minute. That's a daily newsletter and podcast. And we have the wonderful Claire Stevens, from the editor of the website, Mamma Mia.
Hello.
And are you the editor of the podcast as well?
No, so I'm editor, the editorial editor. So
right.
Our podcast team works alongside us.
I see. Yeah. In harmony.
Yes.
In bliss
exactly.
And harmony. We'll get to the bliss and harmony in a minute. But thank you all three for coming. It's a great pleasure to have you on the show. I think we should fill in a little bit of the background for our listeners. So Claire Stevens, let's start back with you. Mamma Mia, very much a pioneer in this space. Tell us what makes Mamma Mia tick.
I think a huge part of it is that we have such a focus on authenticity, candidness, and also not assuming that women want one particular thing or that women are some kind of niche. That's always a bit funny that the industry seems to think like, oh, women, it's an interesting
right.
niche. Totally not really
right.
a niche. Super diverse.
51% of the population
yeah,
for a
yeah,
start.
Not a niche. So
would you say, just to interrupt, but would you say something like the News Corp's WIMMIN thing, is mm-hmm. that kind of treating women as a niche?
I would say so. I'm hesitant to say that, but
it's
I think
okay. You can still work there. It's okay. It's fine.
But I think probably more so than we do, because it's our entire focus, and it has been our entire focus yeah. for over 10 years. And so we're good at knowing what women are talking about and knowing that that's incredibly diverse, that it can be everything from politics to pop culture to pelvic floors, and that you're allowed to know, you're allowed to be interested in a whole lot of things yeah. at once. You're allowed to care about whether Donald Trump is going to be impeached and also care about who's the monster on The Masked Singer. Like they aren't
yeah,
two
sure.
mutually
They're
exclusive,
not
exclusive
things.
Yeah. So I think what we hopefully get right is kind of not pigeonholing women and not having a hierarchy of what you are and aren't allowed to care about, because it's there's a huge range.
Because I know you care a lot about Donald Trump and The Masked Singer.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I know. We're going to talk to the Squiz folk in a second, but I did want to just check in with you, mm-hmm. your personal journey, because so Mamma Mia, 2007, right? A blog
yep.
by Mia Friedman, you know. Superstar, mm-hmm. maven. Is she a maven? Did you say she's a maven? I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think she's a maven. Yeah, Mia the maven. So that's been a hell of a journey for her and that brand, but also for yourself. Tell us a bit about you, because I heard, or maybe I'm wrong here, but mm-hmm. it wasn't that long ago you were the editorial intern.
Yes, so it was 4 years ago, and this is kind of the interesting thing that I'm finding more and more about media. So I didn't study media. I studied, I have an honours degree in psychology.
Oh,
which
that's
just
handy.
Incredibly relevant. But
oh, it is,
people make jokes about it all the time at work. But
yeah.
but so I have always loved writing though, and my sister and I were writing a blog, and I think we were recapping The Biggest Loser, which I miss for the lols, not because it added anything to society. But so we were recapping that and Mia found it and reached out to us and said, I really like your writing. I think it's really interesting, and got us in, and we started from the bottom. So we were interns and assistants and producers and editors, and yeah, now
that all happened in 3 or 4 years.
Four years. So learnt literally from the bottom how to do it all, and I guess one thing about media changing so quickly is that you can enter and learn so much because media is a very different place to even what it was a couple of years ago.
Indeed. And tell me, what did you do your honours thesis in?
I did my honours thesis in anxiety and depression in children and adolescents, and then I was actually doing my master's when I started at Mamma Mia, and I dropped out of my master's to continue because I loved it.
You'll be there when you want to go back.
Yeah.
And you'll be able to do your own personal anxiety journey.
Yeah, exactly.
Can I ask, how the media ruined me. Do you use it in your work these days?
I think something that's really helpful, and I talk to people at work about this, is having that kind of science background. Mm. It allows you to report on research and science in a way that maybe somebody who's just done straight journalism can't. Like, you know how to read research reports, and you know how to kind of find the flaws in them, and especially with all the bizarre health claims and that sort of thing. I'm really passionate about that.
We should have a whole show on this.
Yeah.
I think I love that podcast, Only in Mice. Do you know that one? Because that really, it's a great debate, this whole being able to read science.
Exactly. Not just taking the title of the article or one line from it, but looking at it in context and being able to interpret it.
So you might have noticed there was a question thrown in there, and I should have not introduced my Claire Kimball.
She can't stop herself.
So tell me this. Let's talk about the squiz for a second. So if Mamma Mia grew from a blog to be a business reportedly worth $80 million, what can a free, filtered, fresh newsletter do? Claire first, and then maybe Kate. Claire, you founded The Squiz a couple of years ago. What do you have in mind?
I had in mind a couple of things. One was that I had a long background of being a press secretary. Mm. I think, Peter, the last time I saw you, I was flacking for Tony Abbott and we had a nice lunch somewhere.
That's true.
A long time ago. But, so I had just as a media consumer, a need for a good newsletter that wrapped up across the media every morning, not just one website's take, but a good sort of view across it. And I thought that could have a bit of an impact here in Australia. But the other part of it, of course, being that press secretary and then at Woolworths after my time in politics, I think the example I talk about a bit is when I did my first corporate comms call with the chief executive and the board. There were about 70 journalists on that call. The last one I did, which was a much bigger announcement, I think we were getting rid of our CEO, I think we had 7 journalists.
Wow.
Mm. So my view was...
And that was only in a space of...
About five years. I thought for someone that had that really long work experience in just the classic press secretary sort of game, there weren't going to be the journalists to talk to eventually. Mm. And there was a real need to skill up in building your own audience, talking to people and bringing them along with you. So I thought it was worth having a go.
Well, I'm going to get to Kate in a second, but I'm interested in, just tell us brief for the listeners who haven't signed up to The Squiz. You're crazy if you haven't, of course.
Of course.
What is it? I mean, what's in it? Because today I read a recipe for mushroom risotto and I read about Donald Trump, which goes to Stevens's point, I think.
It's exactly right. And, yeah, it does have that light and shade. There's a cross-section of the fun stuff. That's what I look for when I'm reading. I need something to balance the heavy stuff. But we try really hard to break down the heavy site. We try really hard to break down the heavy stuff into those bite-sized chunks so that you can actually understand it and get good links to go and read some more if that's something that you're really interested in.
Okay. Kate Watson, how does The Squiz make money? I mean, it's on the back of your genius, I take it.
But, of course, on the back of my genius. The Squiz makes money at the moment from advertising revenue.
Nothing wrong with that.
Has done for a couple of years now. So since I joined, when did I join?
Last year. Yeah, 18.
Gosh, you're a veteran.
That's right.
Total veteran.
It's like 20. Yeah.
Yeah. So advertising at the moment. So that mushroom reference you made was an advertising execution.
Was it?
It was. And it clearly said it.
I didn't notice that.
But thank you.
What was the advertising from the Mushroom Authority?
Australian Mushrooms.
AM.
Yeah.
Really?
Mushrooms.
Who knew?
It's great.
I didn't. Really?
Mushroom and chicken risotto. Right.
What's tomorrow's recipe? Is that supported by the Chicken Authority?
We can't tell
can't
you.
Can't tell you that.
You can't. Why?
Still up for grabs, I think.
Really?
Yeah,
you're still selling it.
Anyone listening out there who would like to advertise their recipes in the squeeze, you're very welcome. There we go.
Right.
Can I leave?
Your job is done. You can leave, Claire. I'm going to have to give the same rights to Claire Stevens now, of course. She's going to have to give a massive plug to Mamma Mia. But anyway.
We've had really good support from some really big partners, actually. So CommBank's been a big one. Woolworths came on board really early. We've had Qantas. We've got BP on now. So we're finding that those corporate comms teams, corporate communications teams in those bigger companies are finding the squeeze a really interesting audience to talk to.
This is a question for all. Yeah, that's right. Well, that's the question to all of you, I think. What are they after? Because kind of going back to your point, Claire Stevens, it's really bad to point on radio. It just doesn't work. And going back to your initial point is this idea of the niche. So, you know, I've been in those meetings myself, you know, a bloke talking about, oh, yes, we're going to get more women, blah, whatever. But you guys have kind of cracked the code a little bit. So what was that? Is that? What's that really is? What's that about? So when you go pitching at Woolies or, you know, wherever, what do you say?
What do I say?
Yeah, what do you say? Give us
a pitch. First of all, we talk about our audience. So exactly to your point, the squeeze is all about wrapping our arms around a smart, educated, relatively affluent group of predominantly women. We do have plenty of blokes that read the squeeze and that listen to our podcast. But the idea being there wasn't really anywhere you could go to get that group of people. We're not interested in really anyone outside of that, in the sense that if we can wrap our arms around those, that's a very good business model for us.
There's a lot of those.
There's plenty of them. And that'd be a big enough company.
Right.
So we talk about that. We talk about engagement, though, probably, and I know it's a bit of a buzzword and you're nearly rolling your eyes.
Nearly.
But that doesn't work
on radio either.
Roll away, Peter. Yeah, no one will know.
Rolls the eyes.
It's actually quite easy to grow a database, and there'd be people listening going, well, yeah, you can have a massive database of email subscribers. That's fine. But the idea around the squeeze is that we're growing it very strategically, in that we're really focused on our open rates every day. Mm. We're really focused on how many people are engaging with the email across a week, across a month, and those are the key measures of success for us.
So you're
A-B
testing
brands.
That? I mean, how are you focusing on that, the open rates? I mean, how are you knowing what works and what doesn't?
We have technology that supports all of that data.
Is it secret?
Is it secret, our open rates?
No. No, your secret. is it secret?
Your open rate? Our open rates aren't a secret. They're around 45% every day.
That's high.
Which is huge. It's huge.
It's huge. That's massive, yeah. How does that compare, Mamma Mia? Did you know?
So we've got quite a few different newsletters. Like, we've got a morning one, a celebrity one, a news one. So it's very dependent, and I'm always so fascinated by that data. What makes people open it, and then what makes them open it might not be what makes them keep looking through and clicking on other things, or what makes them open it might also lead them to unsubscribe. So I find that so interesting. So I think ours, I'm not actually up to date on our exact open rates, but I know that 45% is bloody amazing.
And
for us, a lot of that's about the routine of it. Yeah. So why we've picked the 6 a.m. spot is that almost we know from the data worldwide, still in countries that are like us, they reach for their phone first thing in the morning and they check their email. Mm. We can talk about email, whether it's a redundant or an old platform, but we all still do it. Mm-hmm. And being part of that 6 a.m. routine is what
Which is when the squeeze lands.
Yeah.
In your inbox.
Yeah, that's
right. Said that.
That's right. And the podcast,
we have now.
Yeah, that's...
You're just taking over the show, aren't you?
I produce a podcast and I'm like, we haven't said that.
Yeah, right. You got this mental ticker box. Let's say this.
Yeah, that 6 a.m. thing is really important
to us.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, absolutely. Claire Stevens, tell me about the future of media.
Oh, that's a big question.
I'm being a bit flip, but I mean... I've spent a lot of time on the show thinking about that question. I try desperately not to turn it into a negative thing. You know, I think it's easy to be negative about it. In fact, in many ways, I think we're more blessed with the amount of journalism, good journalism we have now, than we've been for a long time. But nonetheless, it is really, you know, it's a struggle because of the business model. So when you think about that, when you think about things like open rates, when you think about what editorial works, when you think about relationship with your audience, overarching all that is kind of, yeah, what's the future here, isn't it? How do we make that relationship into money, really?
Yeah, I think a huge part of it is being agile and being willing to move with the time. So a huge thing, Mamma Mia was one of the first organizations to get to kind of see the potential in podcasts, and we've now got the biggest podcast network, women's podcast network in the world, just a ridiculous number of podcasts, and that's obviously at the moment seeing a huge boom in terms of being able to monetize that,
supported by advertising, like
exactly. Exactly, in so many different creative ways, like even doing a bespoke podcast for a client or like run of network ads and that sort of thing. But I think the future of the industry and the success of a media company is just so dependent on being able to try things, throw things out when they don't work, and keep abreast of all the trends.
Starting to sound like Facebook.
You know, I know. No.
Try things, break things. If they don't work, move on.
Yeah. Well, I think that's kind of our approach, like that you're going to try things and they're not going to work, and you need to be able to move on and try the next thing and not be really discouraged by that. And things change so quickly. Like even like the reliance on obviously other platforms and big tech in media, so Google and Facebook and Twitter. I think on the one hand, you could become incredibly discouraged by that, and we often say it's a little bit like being in an abusive relationship, because you sometimes you get a real boost from it and you feel really, really good because you're in favor, and then the next minute you're not, and it's incredibly destabilizing. And so I think what you've got to do is A, have that willingness to actually learn what the new trends are, and B, probably diversity, like having a few revenue streams, a few ways that you're approaching it, because one model just isn't safe at the moment.
Well, on that point, tell me about Squizhead, someone. Someone over here.
You can talk about squeeze heads.
Claire. We've got two.
Claire Kimmel, lots tell of, me about squeeze heads.
We've got two lots of squeeze heads.
Oh, really?
Our squeeze heads are people who are hugely engaged with what we do. A bunch of them are people who have referred more than five people to the squeeze successfully, and they've signed up, and that's all good, and we're able to track them through our technology. The other group have open rates of around that sort of 90 to 100% and have done so for quite a long period of time. And we know that they're trying to refer it to their friends, but their friends are quite errant sometimes, or they haven't used our way of referring them. They just do it by word of mouth, but we want to reward them for that. The interesting thing about Squeeze Heads is that we polled a bunch of people about if we were to set up some kind of loyalty thing to just keep recognising how much you're enjoying us.
Giving them stuff.
Like giving them stuff. Yeah. What would you want?
Mushrooms, probably.
Do you want recipes? Do you want a cap? Do you want, you
a
know, cap. Events?
Do you want
do
a
you
keep
want,
cup?
What do you want?
Do you and, really want a keep cup? And what did they want?
They just wanted to help us.
Oh.
They seriously, just were really happy to just keep helping us. Yeah. That's
oh, bless.
I know.
It's something quite emotional.
Peter's tearing up.
I'm tearing up.
And I reckon that's the case for that really highly engaged audience. But in terms of driving behaviour for a bunch of others that perhaps like us a lot but not as much as those sort of 90 to 100% people, how do we incentivise them to keep going up that tree? And that's probably
what's the
next.
Answer?
Don't know yet. I think it might be a bit of better engagement directly with us. We're quite hands-off with our audience other than talking to them directly through a podcast, of course, every day, and through an email, which has that very personal, direct
the
tone of voice.
On the road.
Yeah, we don't do that stuff. Yeah. And that's certainly a question for me. I reckon events are really hard. I reckon doing really good events are really hard.
And keep doing
the
them
balance sheet's hard too.
Yeah, it's hard to make money, right?
Yeah. But if there's a payoff in engagement, that's something that we might need to look at.
Yeah.
We had Umbrella. We had Tim Burrows in here the other day from Umbrella. I mean, they've made a basically business.
Done
they've done it. They cracked it.
Mm.
Well, it took them a while, and there's a massive commitment.
Yeah, and we made a decision after the email that the next thing that we would invest in is podcasting. So, or the daily podcast, and now we've got one more as well. So it's just about making those calls and deciding where you fit in. And I think probably to your point and around the future, the medium is so important. Mm. So what medium you choose to actually invest in is so important. And that is something we talk about all the time, because where do people want you in their day? Do they want you all the time? Probably less and less so, because they're sick of people's they're sick of their Facebook feed, they're sick of their Instagram feed. There's a little bit of that.
They want you on demand, don't they?
No, they want us when
want
it's
you
convenient.
At 6 a.m., you're going
when
to
it's
say.
Convenient for them.
Right, yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying.
And it's finding them in those moments. It's finding them in those moments.
Okay, so we're going to go back to what you're going to do next, because that's a great thought. But podcasting, just on that point, do you think we've reached peak podcast?
No.
No, well, I know. Well, you would say that.
Starting.
That was a really stupid question, right?
We're starting.
Well, how many podcasts are there in the world? I think Anthony just said there's 740,000 podcasts in the world. I mean, that seems a lot.
It seems a lot. I don't think, I mean, you'd be really good to talk on this too, Claire Stevens. I just think it's starting. What we know is there's actually a very small audience of people who are listening to podcasts in Australia, and there's lots of data out about that. So as far as it's got to consolidate, there won't be 740,000 that are going to make money, of course.
No. There's about 40,000 that make
money. So I don't know. Yeah. I think we haven't even reached the peak.
Okay,
so
how do you see that, Claire Stevens, Mamma Mia?
Yeah, so I agree. I think what's happening at the moment, I'm fascinated by just everybody's got a podcast. The D-est grade reality star. It's like, I need a podcast. Yeah. It's like, do you? I don't know if you do. But I think it's almost a little bit how I conceptualize kind of written editorial, in that there's kind of this boom and saturation in everybody's got a podcast, there's a podcast about everything. It's just absolutely ridiculous. And then I think it's actually good, because it puts the emphasis back on quality. People aren't going to listen to anything. It needs to be, I think, proportionally a small amount of podcasts get a vast majority of the listens.
Yeah,
like,
that's right.
So there are a lot that aren't if somebody random was just to launch a podcast today, that's not going to, no one's going to listen to it.
Yeah. So, yeah, Claire Kimball, I'd like to see a podcast featuring you and your old boss.
Wouldn't that be boring?
I don't know. Claire and Tony's big show. But on a serious point, do you think there's a role for a Squiz take on a political podcast?
I think it's about finding who your tribe is, and I know there's a lot of people talking about that, and I think our benchmarks for success have changed a lot as well. To have a successful podcast these days, you might only need an audience of 5,000 or 10,000 people, because you've engaged them really highly and you're able to get some commercial support for that, and it underpins the model, which is great. It doesn't have to be 100,000 listens every episode to be successful these days. For politics, for us, we, to Claire's point about trying things, you know, little tests and seeing what works, we were all quite sceptical, even though Kate and I come from a political background, about how an election execution would work for us. We did an email throughout the election campaign, a daily email at the end of the day, which is a different time of day for us, just to see how that worked, and also a weekly podcast that wrapped it up that had another voice in it, Greg Baxter.
Shout out to Greg.
Greg.
Hope you're listening. And did it work?
It worked really well.
Right.
The thing for us, another pillar, I guess, other than the convenience and the tone, is that no opinion piece that we have. We don't talk about anyone in any sort of derogatory terms when it comes to particularly politics. We make sure that any political story has that Scott Morrison said X, Anthony Albanese said Y, with supporting links to both of those positions.
You're very balanced.
Very, very balanced.
Thank
and
you.
It works.
Well, you are balanced.
We work really hard at it.
Would we do something ongoing? I think for us, it's not worth the effort at the moment. Politics, as we know, is just so fractious and divisive, and I don't think it actually underscores who we are and what we're trying to do, which is actually the news is as we call it, a shortcut to being informed. That's how we're helping people in their daily lives. I think there's plenty of other more interesting things that we can help our audience with other than keeping on top of politics.
Example?
Oh, it could be your mushroom recipe. It could be making sure that you've got a great white t-shirt.
I'm totally skeptical of the mushroom recipe now. I've been duped.
It could be, you know, just what you need to do to make sure that when you go to that dinner party, you've got one line on pop culture that, you know, makes it relevant.
The talking point.
Yeah. Those sorts of things.
Okay. Tell me, Claire Stevens, ABC Life started, what was it now, 18 months ago, maybe a bit longer? To use the vernacular, did that piss you off?
No. I think we kind of, there were a few things that emerged at once, sort of in a short period of time. There were a lot of things that I guess kind of created competition in that market. It meant that we weren't, the shoe-in in certain instances or for certain clients. And I think when that happens, you pivot and you just work on redefining exactly what it is that you do and what your tone is and why people are going to choose you over them. And I don't actually think that's a bad thing. I think competition is good. Yeah, it lifts you.
Totally. Makes me really angry.
Would you say that the Squiz is a competitor?
Yes, direct competitor. We have our...
I'm just going to leave the room.
Our daily podcast, The Quickie, which also drops at 6 a.m. And like it's a huge competitor.
And to your point on that, actually, we did launch before the quickie.
Yes, you did, and I will agree with
that. We were so competitive. You are so competitive. You are incredibly competitive.
This is why I landed in a weird sales job. Why do you think? But what I was going to say, a lot of people have asked us, like, were you annoyed about the quickie launching? And our view was, in fact, that the competition is good because people are now talking about daily news podcasts. Mm. People are now discovering daily news podcasts. It only helped us grow.
Is the quickie shorter than the Squiz one?
No, the Squiz is slightly
7 or 8 minutes, isn't it?
I think.
Yeah. Ours can be about 14. Yeah. Or, yeah, oh, really? 14, 15 minutes.
And they're different. And they're very different. Yeah. The audience is, I reckon, pretty different. I don't know your demos, but I would imagine just from listening, they're quite different. But I just think... And going back to your point about whether podcasting has, you know, reached its peak or whatever, no, because there's still so many people that are yet to discover this whole genre of stuff.
Okay.
The competition's good.
I think it forces you to distinguish yourself and work out, okay, that like if it's not enough to just be a daily news podcast, what exactly are we doing and what is our take going to be? And so, I think that was having the competition in the market made us do that for the quickie, decide exactly what
we have similar audiences. When you remember me and the Squiz would be, you'd have a lot of crossover, no? Surely. Am I being naive?
I would probably think so.
I would assume that there'd be a good fraction.
Mamma Mia would have quite a larger audience than you guys, with all greatest respect to the Squiz. Yes. You're not going to get competitive.
No, I'm fine with that. That is an okay statement. I won't challenge you on that one.
How many people sign up to the newsletter? How many, roughly?
35,000.
35. And how many people listen to the podcast?
We've got about 80,000 listeners a week.
Wow. What about the quickie?
The quickie, I wouldn't want to underestimate them, but I think it would be about 10,000 a day.
Right. You really should have said 81.
Very true. Very true.
Podcast analytics, we don't go into that. There's
It's a dark art. Yeah. Let's just quickly talk about Facebook. You mentioned it, Claire Stevens, but I'm interested in your views about this. I mean, foe, friend, frenemy, where do you stand?
It's been a great friend for us, but we mainly use it as an acquisition tool.
Mm-hmm.
We only really started using any paid acquisition for the Squiz about this time last year. Until then, it was all organic word of mouth growth. We got to, I think it was about 20,000 just by word of mouth referrals, and then we switched on after a bit of a capital raising exercise to have a bit of a budget for that. And we're getting that 7.5% month-on-month growth that we're looking for using Facebook acquisition as part of that strategy. It's a great way to find your people if you've got people who can help you.
And it's not stealing your advertising revenue because you've got direct relationships.
We're starting after the crunch time, I guess.
It just is. Facebook, it just is.
We just don't spend time overthinking it.
No.
Because it just is.
Okay. Let's move on to a broader kind of context. I'm interested in your views about things like the recent New South Wales parliamentary abortion debate and how that was reported in the media. It was reported, it's my opinion, I know you, you by all means, you know, it's just my opinion. It was reported really through the prism of politics, and it wasn't really reported much as a women's issue at all. Claire Stevens, what do you think about that? What did you? I mean, it's different in Mamma Mia, I know, but in the broad media, did they get it right or wrong?
I agree that it was very much as a political issue, which is just wrong in itself. That I mean, why it's always a political plaything, I don't know. But we found it was really, we had really interesting conversations about exactly how to cover it and when to, what specifically not to cover. So one thing that we had a big conversation about was the debates about all the amendments and when people would bring in like sex selection and that and that sort of thing. We had a huge talk over, you know, where, do we go into this and look at whether it's actually a thing? And then we went, no, it's not a bloody thing. And we're not going to just attract more attention to the myths that that the detractors are.
You called fake news.
Yeah. We were like, nah, that's actually, because I think that's always a little bit tempting, is to go into the myths and debunking them because you're passionate about it. And then you think, well, hold on, is that myth, just putting that in people's minds, is that actually perpetuating an idea that we don't want any more eyeballs on, or we don't want people to even question it? So, yeah, we had a lot of really interesting conversations around the abortion debate.
Right. Claire Timber, what did you think?
For us, it's a really good example, I think, about how Mamma Mia handles content and how we do. We took a very factual point of view and
straight
line.
So you did go into the sex selection debate?
Not so much. More very good links. Our people really want to know, not so much what are all the views on this. They can work that out themselves. It is, what is the current situation with this legislation? Yes. What is
the bill?
How do you procure abortions?
They're one of the win or loss
anyway,
kind of view.
And where does this go? Give me the facts and I can make up my own mind about it. And that's how we handle a lot of the stuff that
And
we
how
do.
Did you think the, you know, without ruining your chances of getting another job, but how did you, in another media organisation, how do you think the media played it?
I think they did what they do, which is hype it up and turn it into a headline. And I think the way consumers consume it is see it for what it is and make their own minds up. I think you're absolutely right, Peter. I think the media made it and put it through that political prism. But I think people consume it knowing that it's a political thing and making up their own minds.
So, yeah, we do have this problem, not just in this country, clearly, but, you know, that everything seems to be becoming a cultural war.
Yeah.
You know, these big issues. And your audiences don't want that, right?
They know that that's there. That's why they come to us, just to get the factual information. So we're sort of part of that choice to shut down the screaming, bring the tone down a lot, and just give me the facts.
And we know we have people that read the Squeeze from the far left of politics to the far right of politics. Yeah. And they don't. We don't even get emails telling us their political view, or they don't engage with us in that way because it's not what we're there for. And probably that debate is the perfect example of why the Squeeze, when this was such an amazing idea that Claire had, and why I wanted to be a part of it, is because it's so frustrating when you just want to know what's going on. What are the facts of what's happening? What is the bill? What is the bill that's going to Parliament? What is actually happening here? Can I just get the three dot points that I need to understand, and then I'll go and read what I want to read, or I'll make up my own mind based on my own experience or whatever it might be. But I think that's a really core part of why we have grown the audience we've grown.
Do you think Pauline Hanson reads the Squeeze?
We don't know if Pauline signed up.
I don't think she has, but it wouldn't surprise me if she did. We've got a very surprising range of politicians who do engage with it.
Well, Nathan maybe is a...
I don't know.
Do you think Pauline Hanson reads Mamma Mia?
No. I was about to make a mean joke. I'm not going to do it. No, I don't think...
Do you think Mamma Mia skews... is progressive?
We skew left, but we, again, have been made aware lots of times that our audience is more diverse, that like politically diverse than we realise. The kind of biggest reminder was the last federal election, and I think we probably had a certain way of reporting. And sometimes you're not even conscious of your own bias and your own tone and that sort of thing. And so we really kind of recalibrated and thought, hold on, if there's a significant portion of our audience who voted this way, let's hear from them. And we actually got a really interesting response by running a piece from a Liberal voter who was then asked to go on Q&A and talk about her, like, why she voted. Yeah. And because a woman voting Liberal, that was just so shocking to a lot of people. But yeah, I know. And so I think...
That can't be true.
I think it's also something that we've had to recalibrate on since Trump's election is just making sure, I think media was probably, and we were probably a lot more confident in sort of having a certain tone. And then Trump's election and what ended up happening, looking at that and going, hold on, that's actually detrimental to the discourse. So we try to take the approach of not having the snarky tone about somebody that a writer might disagree with.
I'm so pleased you mentioned Trump, and we're running out of time, but I did want to ask you and then Claire and Kate about that. I mean, Trump, I'm still trying to grapple with it, and you guys would know better than I would, why so many women voted for Trump, especially when that tape came out about, how he thought about women. I mean, can you explain that?
This is a thing I, like a lot of women, have probably thought about a lot. And I think something that we've found even in our really recent audience research is that women don't want to be pigeonholed and they don't want to be defined. So they don't want to be told, if you vote for Donald Trump, you're a bad person. That's not going to get them on side. That's not going to change their mind. That's going to make them more staunchly in the camp of people who say that people on the Trump side who are saying, it's okay, like this is about freedom and making America great again. And so I think we're learning that people just don't, the more you are snarky and rude and dismissive of the other side, you do not win them over. That is not the way to win them over.
I would imagine that's a similar view, Claire Kimball.
Claire's nailed that. And I think to that point about the audience, I mean, the thing that always made me smile a bit is that there was no discussion about why men would support Donald Trump, particularly men who liked women.
It was so like, women failed
us. It was,
fair point. Very fair point.
It's not in that corner, things are a lot more complicated than that.
Yeah, okay.
There's nothing I can add to that, but to completely agree.
You totally agree. We're in the unity ticket. So I'm going to ask you the last question, Kate. Do you think a strong woman, that sort of strong woman trope in, say, US politics or in our own context, vis-a-vis, say, Julia Gillard, do you think we're ready for do you reckon the voting public in somewhere like the US or somewhere like Australia is ready for that?
I have no idea about the US, and I don't really have any idea about Australia. I mean, I don't know, but yeah, I think, Claire laughs at me all the time, but people are people. And, they're going to be good at what they're doing or they're not. And I don't think that we're not ready.
Okay.
If that is
I give Australians the benefit of the doubt on this stuff. Yeah. And
despite what happened to Gillard?
Well, we could have a whole conversation about whether Gillard was a competent prime minister or not.
Yes, we could. And that is another show.
Perhaps we won't do that.
We should. We should have that conversation. That's a good conversation to have.
And there's no doubt. I mean, that's not to deny that some pretty nasty stuff happened to her around the sexism thing. That absolutely happened. But I think there's also a lot on the competence scale. We also called out an incompetent prime minister in Tony Abbott, and no one really talked about that a whole lot, about his sex either. So I think Australians are
pretty...
But
you worked for him.
When he was not prime minister. He was a great opposition leader, great minister.
Hey!
Prime ministers are linked to others.
You two can sort that out. Okay.
But, I think Australians are good at sizing up character and sizing up performance, and I give them the benefit of the doubt on that.
Okay. Final word for you,
Claire. Yeah, I think we are, I hate these words coming out of my mouth. I think it has to be a certain type of woman, because I am being realistic about how certain people react to women. But
what do you think that certain type of woman is then? Yes, an intrigue. You can't just leave it like that. I'm sorry.
Well, I just think looking at what happened in the US, I think a huge part of Donald Trump's election was a failure of conversation, and so that's what I would be wary of. I think it's easy to sort of kind of rally support and be incredibly have a one-track mind about what you want and what your values are, and if you don't engage with the other side and treat them with respect and and treat their concerns with respect. I actually think the weird parallel is the abortion legislation. I actually think Gladys Berejiklian did a really good job with that. And that if you are just staunchly on your side and refuse to compromise and refuse to engage, then things don't change.
Okay.
Yeah.
Look, we really could talk for at least another hour. I love this. I love this edition of the Fourth Estate. I'd like to thank Claire Kimball and Kate Watson from The Squiz for coming
on.
Thank
you, Peter.
Thank you.
And Claire Stevens from Mamma Mia.
Thank you.
It's been great. Let's do it all again.
Anytime.
Okay, great. Any 6 o'clock. Any 3 o'clock in the morning.
Probably early.
We're on fire. Yeah.
I'm amazed you're still awake. It's great. Thank you for that. That's about all we have time for on this edition of the Fourth Estate. But please make sure you subscribe to the Fourth Estate on your favorite podcast app so you can hear us talk about media and politics and a few things in between at your leisure. And we'll be back next week with more. But in the meantime, you can stay in touch with us on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is Fourth Estate AU. And big thanks to Anthony Dockrell, my producer. My name is Peter Frey. Thanks very much for listening.